Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Preview Show. Today I am delighted to be joined by Ben O'Connor of AJ Tour Citroën as we take a look back at his 2021 season. Hi Ben, how are you?
Good, you?
Very good, thank you for asking. Where in the world do we find you tonight?
In Andorra at the moment, with lots of other guys in general. But yeah, no, I'm here at home. Nice day, did a nice little 3.5 hour ride today just to start moving slowly.
So let's rewind all the way back to winter last season. It wasn't perfect, if I remember correct, for you. What happened?
No, so pretty much it was one of my first rides back. I think it was the third ride back. I was just with a mate, my mate Tristan, down in Girona, and I slipped out on the mountain bike. Actually, wrong, I didn't slip out. I kind of went over the top of the handlebars. I broke my collarbone and I broke all the ligaments that join the collarbone to kind of your sternum and your neck. So it took a long time for me to be back on the road because yeah, it takes a long time for ligaments to heal. So it was a pretty shitty moment. But I think in the end, it wasn't the worst thing if you think about a little bit of hindsight, because I had more rest in that period, and because the season finished so late, and with the Giro the year before, I was luckily enough to finish on peak form. So kind of if you kind of like make sense, you're at peak form, so it takes a long time to get back down to rock bottom, and I feel I never got back to that point. And if I actually started training full in December, maybe I wouldn't be able to last, let's say, like the Tour de France, for example, because the last couple of days of the tour, I was already on my hands and knees.
So, new team in the winter. Obviously, you switched the group to AG2R Citroën. What was the vibe like the first few meetups? Did you feel like it was the right place for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a change. I needed a change from where I was. And obviously, the team was, as an entity in Quebec, was also changing itself. I felt like the last couple of years have been not stagnant, but I felt like this weird pressure, and I couldn't ever like perform as you kind of would hope so. You would see me do some great ride at some point somewhere and like, oh look, this guy can ride. And then I'll just be so bad for the next couple of rides and next couple of races. When I joined the team, they were very much wanting me to just race as the Giro actually went. That was all they actually asked for. They were like, okay, we reckon you could probably do GC in the future, but this year you're just going to race like you did at the Giro, and you can like pick actually kind of what races that would work for you, because we reckon that you can actually win races. So that was kind of quite cool, because often I feel with NTT, I found myself in this position where I was always thinking about like the kind of GC kind of point. And it was always try to do your best result, and like 10th would be great for the team, or 15th actually. So it wasn't enough of a push, whilst at Azure Desert, they were really quite keen on just winning races, which I think was quite a big change, and kind of like fits with that aggressive former racing I kind of like to do. Just you have to try to be able to win, but if you don't, then you really just don't win, unless you got a good sprint and you can luck out. But for me, that's not the case.
Do you think you responded well to that type of pressure that was put on you, the idea of we want you to win races?
Well, I think it's because it's what I wanted to do. So it wasn't actually pressure per se from them. Like, you have to perform, or you have to get these amount of top 10s, or from next year for sure will be like that. But initially when I joined, it was really about winning, and that's what I wanted to do. And I don't care where it is either. It can be in Paris-Nice, it can be in Romandy, it could be in Vuelta. I don't really mind. It just has to be at least one win per year. And then obviously you got your ideals, but it was a good motivator, and I think that it kind of like worked out well, where in the end actually the GC thing kind of came back because of it.
So you started the season Provence, and then Hope Var, where you were third, I think, in the final stage. It was quite an aggressive, kind of crazy sort of stage. And then you went to Paris-Nice. Was Paris-Nice like your first sort of main goal of the year?
Partly. Actually, not really, to be fair. Like, I knew I was actually meant to be doing Torino, but they changed my my plan because the first races in France went well. Because I started riding outside for the first time in January. I think it was the 1st of Jan or 30th of December was my first ride outside. And, like, I just felt super shit. And in the training camp, they always put me in, like, the inverted commas slow group, like the guys who had other, like, who just weren't at the same level. Like, you know, some of these French guys are absolutely on fire for the start of the year, like really very good. So I was like a bit pissed I was in this slow group because that was never how I kind of like trained. So it was quite interesting, but in the end, it all worked out and I was not confident going into Provence and I felt so bad. Initially, the first couple of days, I remember on Vol 2, I was like, no, I'm going to give this a go. And I was flicking with Alaphilippe and he was having a go at me. I'm like, no, I feel good. I'm going to be, I want to give this a go. And then about like a K later, I dropped. It was so bad. Super embarrassing moment for myself. Like, fuck. I then had a day off actually. And then like three big days of actually training with Greg and Ollie, Van Avermaet and Narsen. So it was pretty cool training around that like Nice area on Tibes for a few days before Port Var. So actually ended up being like almost like a 2-week proper block of kind of training and racing. So maybe that's why by Port Var things like kind of clicked. And that's how I then got put into Paris-Nice. And that was a big goal always for the team, not so much for me, but like the team, that's always a huge thing. And I definitely don't love the race at all. But it went well, but not like great. There was still like a long way to go and you were still missing like that December kind of part of training, I guess, where you were just missing that final touch compared to other guys. So it was actually, once again, like quite big driving forces to improve for what's coming up later. It was actually from there, really, they were like thinking more about the tour, actually. For me, there was like always an idea. And they were like, yeah, you can go there to try win a stage. But it was always up in the air at that point.
Because I remember at the start of the season, you said to me, actually, you first thing was to try and get picked for the tour.
Yeah.
That was first goal.
Yeah.
So when did you actually find out about tour selection? When did that happen?
Probably after Romandy. Romandy was like, it was set, but you're not per se told. And you can't really go out and boast about it with this team. It's a big thing. There's lots of French guys, and obviously it means a lot to them, like more than what I would actually ever think about it. Like you have your own dream, but for them, they've dreamt and lived it from when they were like a child. So it has even more of an allure, and also it's your home race. I have the feeling when you do TDU, you feel super proud about it. So it's not a thing to like go around telling people that you're for sure set. But after Romandy, it was, yeah, for sure set because the race went well and I really should have finished on the podium overall. And yeah, that's a big result. And it was proof that you could do big results in big races, pretty much.
So you second on the Queen stage in Romandy, thanks to Geraint Thomas crashing
himself.
You mentioned there you slid off the podium, like the TT, you were 16th.
Yeah.
On the day, I remember watching it. It was a decent TT, I thought, from yourself. I think you're maybe being a bit harsh.
It wasn't a good time trial. I mean, I also had done very, very little work on the TT bike by that point. Like bits and pieces, but not heaps. I definitely, because the whole year, the plan was never kind of a GC. So like I just fell with form into it. And it's easy for people to say, look, like you showed in the Giro and then like the start of the year that you were clearly good enough, but I never ever shown consistency throughout like any race bar, maybe two in my past. So it kind of fell really really unexpectedly, and it was actually only after Romandy that it was like a panic TT kind of like session. But compared to other guys, I'm far underdone in that sector, and it's like one of my main points I need to improve on. But yeah, I remember that Romandy TT just having, it was shocking, but it worked out well. I think maybe it was the weather or the form. I don't know, but I definitely didn't feel good.
Then Dauphiné, your TT was, you were 13th on the day.
Yeah.
That was a big...
I would say that's my best TT ever. Definitely. By like a long way. That first day? No, it's like third day. I can't remember now, actually. But yeah, I was super proud of that. It's by far the best TT. I didn't do a TT like that in the tour.
you mentioned consistency. So Dauphiné, you really cracked the kind of consistency. You were fifth on Le Plan, fourth in Leggetts, eighth in GC, a solid TT. That must have been very, very pleasing, walking away from Dauphiné with such good results.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked. I was also a bit pissed because I lost time on like a weird kind of like semi-mountainy kind of stage with this uphill kick, and I was just a bit cooked, actually. So, I don't know. It's just one of those things where the consistency was almost perfect, but not quite perfect yet. So I left that race being like, I should have finished. I still believe I should have finished like podium in that race, at like third or fourth at least, but I really should have been better. So I left there still hungry, like still going, like, damn it, like I still fucked up, really. And if you want to get up to that level that you really want to, like you have, you only, at this point, I hadn't had form for like such a long period of time, like, you know, before. So I wanted to make the most of it because it hasn't, like, sometimes it's been very hard to find. So whenever I miss something or miss a chance to win, then I get real annoyed, real angry, because you want to take every single opportunity you can.
You seem to build proper momentum. So Romandy to Dauphiné, you really seem to be building and building perfectly in time for Tour de France. You mentioned maybe your crash last winter was perfect. You've not come hot. So what was the build up like? What was that kind of week leading up to the tour like? What was your hopes, your expectations?
Well, for training, it was like definitely off the reins, doing as little as you kind of can, but being very specific. But it wasn't definitely like everything was already all done before, and I had a lot of confidence from guys before Dauphiné as well. And then we had a training camp, and it was a lot of fun. And it was also like a lot of guys were giving me big confidence for coming into the tour. So I came in not scared for the performance side of it. For sure, I shed myself for the first couple of days. Like that first week is so bad. Like it really sucked, actually, those first couple of days. But for the performance point, I wasn't like feeling ever I was out of my depth, which is, I don't know, maybe it's just how I am, but I felt confident. And you have a bit of, not cockiness, but you have like a quiet confidence that you can perform at this level. I just wasn't sure I'd be able to get around the actual like dangers of the tour, and yeah, it almost screwed up most people, actually. But I guess that's kind of how it is. The prep was pretty good though, like in terms of where the team was setting us to aim at. The first day was quite complicated because we still have guys that really had big aims. Like Greg's always done well in the first week of the tour. He's always been sitting at least top five GC. I think the last couple of years he's done the tour, and he's also had the yellow jersey. You have Benoit Gosnefroid, who has performed in the past well in Plouay. And even though he had some struggles this year, both of them did, it was a pretty bad luck that like ruined their kind of hopes. So we came in very like keen, and then after that first day everyone was like, it's not going to be easy from here. Like, you're going to be, we're going to have to pick up our legs, pick up our bags, and see if we can still find the seat.
I've heard many people talk about Tour de France and the nerves opening week, day one, how different it is to the Giro and the Vuelta. I mean, you're in a perfect position to explain it. Day one, we all saw the horrific crashes. Just how crazy is that first stage?
Well, the first day I think is a little bit unfair because what the first crash wasn't actually anyone's fault. For sure something was going to happen, but maybe not to that extent at that point. You know, like really it was a quite unexpected moment for a crash. Like the very top of quite a fast climb. Everyone's very, very close. And yeah, that was pretty... It wasn't like it was super high speed either, which is kind of ironic because like you would think a high speed crash would take out more guys, which it did eventually. Like the last one was actually shocking. That was by far the worst I think I've seen in like a bike race. But yeah, some guys are pretty mucked up from it. But there's more injuries, I think, from the first crash where everyone was very close together and you just fall really badly, I guess. It's just like really not fun, the point where you can't move in the bunch. Like once it's set, it's really very hard to try and find any opening pretty much. And that's the most difficult thing to wrap your head around. And sometimes you just have to put your like white flag up, like I'm here. This is my spot now for the next 30 Ks. Don't lose it. And that like that also drags on you because you know you're not in the perfect position. And you've been told it as well. Be like, well, what can I do? There's no moving from here. So I think that's one of the worst parts about it. And the sprint stages I found actually okay. They were actually much harder than I thought they were going to be. Every sprint stage was a lot faster and a lot harder. Like I'd heard stories about these flat days being like really easy, but they were just not. Like there was really no... From what I remember, there weren't too many easy flat days. And maybe that's just because you found yourself in this position where you were like on GC, but they were never in that first week easy.
So after stage one and stage two, you were about 3 minutes down on GC.
Yeah.
Not a great start. Where were you mentally at that point? Was it still all in for GC or were you starting to worry a bit?
Even on that first day, I mean, I was in the, obviously the first crash, I cut my arm, actually, it's what my little history from the chain rings. And then I was in the second crash and I was with Ollie Narsen and Lopez, I think, Angel Lopez. And then I was like, Ollie, do you ride? Like, do we ride? Because my arm's pretty fucked up. I don't know. I think I've broken my shoulder. I don't reckon we can I don't know. I can't get out saddle at all. I can't lift my arm. He's like, oh, no, I don't. Honestly, just ride. And then Lopez was riding quite hard, so I sat behind him. And we didn't finish that far behind. We finished maybe a minute something. But considering the crash and, sitting up, it's not that much time to lose. And then on the second day, I was just so sore. So I got dropped at the very bottom of Murder Breton. Second time up, straight away. It was not even close. So the confidence was pretty much gone completely by then. The whole thing was just now finished the Tour de France. I had no other expectations but to heal, to finish the Tour, and then, hope by the last week I was okay. Because I really didn't think I was going to get any better by the third week. That's where the head was at. Not a good spot. And I actually had a little voice diary of it. And it's pretty sad reading just to listen to me. Cause I'm just, yeah. It was just one of those moments where you've started your first tour and you know, you came in as a guy that probably could do something because I knew where my form was at. But yeah, that was all gone after the first 2 days.
But then the TT, I suppose you're still recovering from your crash at 31st on the TT. Not your finest.
No, not the worst, but not the best. But definitely not the best.
Then we go to the first big mountain stage. Horrible weather conditions. Pogacar goes and does what he does, and you finish in the main group of favourites. So that must have been a surprise, I suppose, considering how hard you found the first week.
Yeah, that day was actually... it was so dangerous the first couple, like the first close start of this climb. And it was really technical downhill. A fair few guys crashed there. And it was just like on it all day. That was kind of what worked well. And I wasn't getting dropped by that point. So you knew you were like better than you were earlier in the race. And then to finish with the guys there on Grabbenau was super, super cool. Like I really didn't expect it. Initially, I thought I was going to get dropped for sure. But it was just this like grit where the team was always very confident. They're like, look, just stay with them and do everything you can because we still reckon you can finish like 10th. If you take out the guys that we think you're going to get dropped and by the time you feel better, you then perform like you should in the mountains, then we reckon you can finish in the top 10 still. So like you have to try. And it was also, you're in Savoie, which is the home of Citroën, like the team's based in Chambéry. So it really, to perform there was also really important for the team. So it was like an impetus. Actually, at the start of that stage, the CEO of Citroën was actually at the start. He's just at a barrier. You know, this is like a big dog in the automobile manufacturing kind of world. And he's just there chatting to us in the rain. Like that's another like big motivator because you have quite a big guy, someone who's actually sponsoring the team fully there right at the start. So it kind of adds a little bit more impetus to want to do well. And actually, yeah, I was a bit over the weather though. I was hoping for some more sunshine.
So then next stage, I think it was your winning team. So
yeah.
If I remember correctly, the plan was not for the breakaway.
No.
What was the pre-stage chat?
Well, the pre-stage was Norns and Aurelien, in particular Aurelien, to be in the break, because they still, I can't remember if they thought the break was going to win or not. I think they were a bit unsure, but they were like, Aurelien, you have to be in the break kind of today. That's your thing, because it couldn't be anyone else pretty much. So yeah, when like we went up that Col de Saxony, I think it is in Megève, and you're climbing up towards there, we had no one there. I couldn't see Aurelien. I couldn't see Norns. I couldn't see Dorion. I couldn't see Ollie. Like zero of the boys were around. Like, oh, shit. And yeah, I jumped super late with like a couple guys. Like just really, really very late. And just to follow it, didn't actually think it was going to work out and stick. And I sat last wheel for the whole top where we're in Megève and it's like drag as we went towards Lassesi. So I was still a bit like, I thought the break was still going to keep, as in like UAE were going to chase us because the group was so big. And I didn't know who was actually in the break because I was too far behind in the breakaway anyway. So it was a bit of a bizarre start because that wasn't what I told anyone. And I was on the phone to Sarah, my fiance, and I was in such a bad mood. I was like, fuck this. Like it's raining again. It's so bad. It's going to be super cold. And like it's just all day gonna be like this. I was having not a bar of it. I think the last thing I said to her was like, well, I guess you just gotta get on and get it done. So I guess in the end that's what happened. But the whole lead up to it was very not motivating.
So did you jump because you couldn't see any of your teammates left?
No, that's the only reason why I went. The guys, like, I was told specific because I actually asked the team, I was like, well, can I get in a break today? They're like, no. We reckon it's going to be pulled back still anyway, even in this weather. And I think the break's just going to, like, just die eventually. And then one of those GC guys will win the first, like, big mountaintop finish. So I was, like, a bit unsure. I don't know what else really to...
Because you were 14th on GC, you were eight something down.
Yeah.
You were kind of like 3 minutes behind the kind of top 10 kind of guys. So, I mean, I looking at the stage, I think I picked you in my preview for a start off, for a breakaway. Yeah. Big
I may have read that, to be fair. It's always nice to see an angle there.
And then it just seemed like chaos. Like, obviously, they had the start where there was this short climb and it was attack and attack and attack, and then the main peloton was small, and then it broke. And as you said, I was looking for you and couldn't see in the first kind of group and second group, and then I think it went through an intermediate sprint, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was Michetin and Cabrelli that were riding for it, because they were kind of like this big lead out into the climb, and then it really kicked off. It was pretty gnarly. And then we started the Saces, and I was like, once again, as I said, I was like right at the very, very back of this group. I don't know how many guys were there, 40, 30, but I was dead last. So, yeah, I didn't start like that climb ideally, but I had a pretty good run from behind. And then you could see Quintana going and Cabrelli and Wout Poels. I was like, well, I'm here now. I've got this like a 2-minute gap. Like I've got to carry on doing it. Because I still had this like, you want to conserve yourself a GC, and this wasn't like conserving. I had to do a big effort to just, you know, to then now be at the front of the race, and I hadn't planned that. So I was using a lot of energy, and I wasn't sure if that was the best thing to do. But obviously I wasn't going to sit up either. Like, you know, it's kind of like, you can't just be sitting up because you're the only Asian dessert guy in a, you know, 40 man breakaway. And yeah, then it was just business as it kind of kicked on. You were then at the front of the race, and then that's how kind of the rest of it panned out. You were just trading punches for the next couple of hours.
I mean, as a GC rider, you were in a very tricky / dangerous position, because if the main group chases and you've wasted all energy in the climb, your GC is over.
But the thing is, you're in this point where no one believed I'd be able to do GC that was in that breakaway either. I mean, Mike was rolling, Nairo was rolling, Nairo was kind of partly rolling. Walt was just doing his own thing. Higuita was rolling. Like, we were kind of more or less just like riding threshold whilst rolling, but then not like always. It was weird. I've never been in a break where you ride that hard all day. Normally there's points where you kind of ease in and you can chill. And it happened only one point on Rosalon where it was a bit more like easy. But before then was just a block full. So it was, it was pretty rare. I guess that's why the gap stayed also so high as well, because we really rode quite fast all day.
you mentioned that it was Wout Poels, Mike Woods, Nairo Quintana, Sergio Higuita, Lucas Hamilton for a bit, yourself. You managed to get yourself away from the rest of the breakaway riders, including some pretty big hitters who were left behind. And then you've got the normal tour situation where the guys who are going for polka dots just start doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
How do you measure your effort when you've got Quintana and Woods just trying to fly?
Well, if you're looking down and you're seeing like that kind of 400 to 450 at the top of a climb, and these guys are like really just like punching out away from you, there's not even any point to try and just go with them, because you know that they're just going for the KOM. I know Mike wasn't going to win that stage 100%. I was never ever frightened of him. I was only frightened of Nairo because of what he's done in the past, and maybe he's on one of those magic days too. But you could see also it hurt him by the time we got to the bottom of the teams as well. So you just had to be aware that that was their battle, and the only one that wasn't there for the battle was then Higuita, really, because Lucas was then dropped and he was a bit cooked by that point. While Poels just rode very silly. He was also just destroyed. So, like, there's only kind of two guys to think about.
Then on Rosalond, so it was just the three of you left at that point, you and the two Colombians. Yeah. And for the first time, it looked like they were trying to lean on you and make you do longer turns, because obviously there was a chance for you to move into yellow. Did you feel that?
Yeah, so not actually on, I guess just over Col de Pré, and then we were going along the dam, and then like Nairo like let this like hella gap go, and then he would not close it at all. Only I would. I sat up a few times completely with the brakes on. He's like, nope, and like would not do a single thing. And then eventually we caught Higuita, and I was like, what was that for? And they got like no answer. And then they were chatting behind me whilst I was riding. I was like, I know I'm going to get flicked at some point, but I don't know when I'm going to get flicked, but you'll find out eventually. You just have to be strong enough to be able to like respond. I still had my own race by that point too. There was still the GC, but also the stage, but we hadn't started the final climb yet. I think if you were then really, yeah, you know what I mean? Like you're still in this like kind of middle ground where you hadn't hit the final climb. So it wasn't like it was all up to me to do all the work at that point. Because in the end, they didn't. They were still rolling quite hard, and then they did the descent really, really, like really fast. And yeah, I had an absolute shocker. Probably one of the most embarrassing moments I've had. There's like, you could say celebrating across the line when you think you've won, when you haven't, would be the worst. But then also just getting dropped full flat on a descent is also pretty shocking. But that was my own fault for glove choice and not putting them on earlier, actually, because I was really struggling. I guess you get in that, as I said, that moment with Quintana and Higuita when they were chatting, and that's when I should have put it on, like 5Ks earlier, 10Ks earlier. Not there. So I guess I was just lucky by the time I get down to the bottom that they were both really cooked.
So you mentioned there the descent, you were dropped, you got back on, you were dropped again. Yeah. Higuita was flying on the descent. And then you get to the bottom of the descent, and I think it was the gap had gone out to like 35, 40 seconds. It was pretty huge. Did you?
Yeah, I almost set up at the bottom of the descent. I was like, no, that's it. That's me done. I'm finished. I just ruined a great chance to win a stage, but I still have to then do a TT to get to the finish because I still had a massive gap. But I took the bottom left-hander and we're on this big valley road. I could see them up ahead. I was like, oh, it's not that far. Like, it's really not. So you just get into your mode and do what you can do. Not like going flat, but at least strong enough where you know the gap's coming down. And as soon as you hear 30 seconds, 25, 20, you know you're catching. There's no, and even if they're just rolling easy, but they wouldn't be. They would be rolling off hard to try and keep the gap. Like, well, they're both Colombian guys. Why would they have been kind of like faking it to each other? So the fact that you were still able to close that gap and be okay, like controlled, then it was like quite a lot of confidence then for the climb. And it wasn't, by that point, it was still seeing if they would like work with me. And seeing Naira drop early was the big surprise. I didn't expect that at all. Because he was the strongest all day. That whole day, he was like, looked the strongest and the best out of everyone. So that was a big surprise. And then I believed you could win. But, you know, Sergio is a really good rider. He's got like a lot of talent. And I was just a bit worried that he would then just sit the whole time on me and then not let me, I thought he was bluffing completely. Like, his pulls are really soft. I was like, I understand why you're pulling soft. But yeah, I guess he was then just really cooked as well.
So when you got back on, I noticed that straight away you come in and you try to skip a turn, you shake your head and Nairo just drops straight in behind. Yeah. Not even a chance of a rest. Yeah. I thought that was pretty mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's Nairo. He's pretty, like, notorious for the way he races sometimes. But I also understood partly. I also had to do my job too. I still had this time gap and I had to try and make it work. My director was telling me not to roll. He's like, do not roll. Come back to the car, get some more food and stuff like that. But I just made this big effort and felt okay. So I was like, I'm just going to commit. Like, I got a big chunk of food before from him. I had this, like, the better fuel. I had all the gels. I was completely set. I was completely fueled. I really made a conscious effort all day to just take in a lot of food. So maybe that's also what helped a lot. Like, I really made an effort there. And we really planned actually as a team for having a lot of these high carb drinks the whole day. I'm sure every team did that, but it was very, very important. Every single climb, there had to be something, which was like 80, 100 grams of sugar, carbohydrates, whatever, in the bottle. Like, it had to just be full, because you weren't going to touch on a descent. It was too wet and slippery. And the only time you could do it was at the bottom of a climb. So I feel that made quite a big difference.
So then you mentioned that Nairo drops early.
Yeah.
Then just the two of you, and watching it on TV, Higita's face was, he didn't look comfortable at all. I don't know if you picked up on that.
No, never. I don't know why, but like, I had zero idea. Actually, what I should have done earlier was take off my gloves and my jacket, because I had them on for far too long. But you're in that moment where you're still cold and you're still like soaked through. But as soon as you actually pull them off, sometimes it's a lot better, because then you don't have that sodden feeling that's always on your hands or on your body. So as soon as I took that off, I actually felt a little bit better. And I hadn't looked at Higita at all, about what he was feeling, what he was doing. Like, I just knew he was pulling soft. So the point where I actually dropped him, I had no idea, because I was like, I'm going to pull a couple big turns, a couple strong ones, a couple long ones, and see like what, if he keeps the pace or if he just sits on me. Because if he does, I'll let him roll over me one more time and then I'll go over the top. It was pretty much it was like a tester to see where he was at, pretty much. But yeah, he then just dropped quite easily in the end. And it looks a little bit undramatic, but...
That was 17.3 kilometers to go. That's quite a long way to go solo.
Yeah, I haven't done a solo that long before, that's for sure. I mean, what else can you do? He was going slow for me at the time. And like, once again, he still had this gnarly gap, which was coming down. So I had to do something. And then it was coming up again once I left. So I was like, this is great. I'm actually building. And for sure, they're going to close it later because the time gap's obviously delayed. But at that time, I was like, it's like, this is really good. And I know Pogacar's got a hell of a lead. So actually, in the end, you're sitting in a pretty sick little spot. Plus, you had the stage. But in the end, realistically, all you thought about was the stage. That was the only thing. And
even when it went to 9 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought they were going to close. I was still worried. The way Tade was riding, hey, like, you still have this like weird doubt where they're just going to rip it. It'll take 5 minutes out of you in the bottom. It's a long climb. And then the last couple of Ks when I'm on my hands and knees were taking like 2 minutes. So I was still worried that they would just come storming up there. But yeah, but they didn't. And I was actually pushing some really good numbers. So in the end, it was actually really quite fast. That bottom section was more or less not where I dropped Higita, but after quite big ringy for quite a fair section of it. You just have to lock yourself in. And yeah, as I said before, get it done, because the next crucial point was just getting to that last section of the climb. It was like 5Ks at 7%, I think, and just getting there. Like, then you know that's all that's left, pretty much. It was in that point where you were just thinking to yourself, I have to get to that point. And once I get there, then there's another point after that, which is the 2Ks to go where it goes flat. So that's kind of how you kind of broke it down to yourself. And you were safe from that 2Ks to go kind of banner. But I didn't actually know the gap. So I was reading the chalkboard wrong, because I thought the gap to the guy behind me was the yellow jersey gap. So like, you know, at one point it was 20 seconds, then it went to like a minute, then it came down again. And yeah, I was just reading it like, I was just also really tired. So yeah, it's a bit bizarre. You could say, I listened to your radio, but the director was very calm in the radio. He was like, this is a time trial. All you have to do is think about yourself and do what you think you can do. Like, just don't overdo it. Like, calm your emotion. Don't ride on emotion. Ride on like what you think you can do.
When did you think you won it then? When did you know that you'd got it?
Probably with 4Ks to go.
So then my next question, which is a weird one, did you enjoy any of that stage?
Yeah, actually, it's probably the most, for me, it's one of the most spectacular ones I've been in. Because, I guess because you were in the front of the race the whole time, and it was very, like, punch on punch, so it felt very crazy. And maybe from being a spectator, it didn't look like that, but for me, it felt like that because there's always something going on at the front of the race. There was Wout in front, and there was also Nairo, and I got dropped and came back. Like, it was quite dramatic in that kind of sense, where I saw a lot of kind of things. And the climb itself has like a nice memory for me as well, because I've done it when I was younger, when I was skiing. Like, I've been up there, I've skied up in teens before, so it's pretty special for me that next time I go up there was actually the win stage of the Tour de France. It's really like ridiculous. So yeah, I've got great memories of just like that valley. And the moment where you're going through those galleries and those last couple Ks, where I was really on like the absolute limit by that point. But there was still what felt like for me, lots of people around those galleries. And I know it would have maybe been more people if it was sunny, but it felt super special. And there's not a lot of that day that I look back with negative feelings, except that descent.
From the wonderful highs to the terrible lows, and just how much do you hate Mount Ventoux?
I think it's just, you've had some, like, Provence, I understand the shit experience I had because it was the first race back, you know, after the collarbone. I'd only been riding outside for a month and a half, so I can be forgiven for having a bad day there. The Mont Ventoux challenge was like 2 days after what's it called? Dauphiné. The day after Dauphiné, I think I was that was just not a good idea. But I saw the descent, and I think that then helped for the tour day, where then we did Ventoux, and I was once again actually quite confident in that day. Actually, I was we rode second team all day. I think we showed ourselves, we showed our structure, and yeah, guys can can joke about as you deserve not helping me more, maybe. But in the end, the team didn't come with that aim exactly. And the guys who were there were more than helpful for the days that I actually hate more than Ventoux, which is the days after, not actually Ventoux, because that's my own fault. I had a bad day. I got a bit too hot, and maybe I could have been better with cooling. You were good, but I was better in Andorra. It was just as hot in Andorra. It wasn't more, but I coped much, much better that day. But yeah, long story short, Ventoux is still like not a climb I love. I don't like the bottom of it. I think it's like a bit ugly, and the top's quite nice, but I just don't love it at all.
And you go to Andorra, like your home stage. I don't know, maybe you were worried because of what happened on Ventoux, but then you have a super strong day.
Yeah.
You get dropped a little bit at the top of the final climb, but you get back on in the descent. You finish with the main guys. At that point, do you then start thinking about what is possible overall?
Yeah, well, by that point, you definitely believed you could be top five. Like, there was 100% then you are in this top five fight. And there's no way you could probably, unless you have a really shocker, like a real shocker of a day, it wasn't going to be worse than top 10. So you're already in, you know, a great spot. I had nothing to lose. I'd already won a stage. I'd come and done what was, you know, told of me, but also what I dreamed of. So in the end, anything above that was, it's easy to say it was a bonus, and that's your, like, but it kind of, that's what it was. So it came there in a really special place then for the Pyrenees, knowing that I could do a great ride on actually climbs that suit me also really, really well. They're quite long. Doesn't mean they're always steady, but I just like long climbs. I don't really mind if it's undulating, but just long suits me well. So I was really looking forward to that Col de Portet stage. I was really very, very keen for it. And probably that day was the best stage of the race for me, like for the GC performance. For sure, the team stage is unreal, and that will always be the best, but the Portet stage was the one I was most proud of when I was in a very big GC kind of position, because the anxiety and the stress and the constant thought process in the Peloton really weighs you down. And I was, after that stage, very, very tired.
You finished fifth on the stage, but fourth best GC rider, go do it.
Yeah.
To try and stay with the GC guys that day. So you then go to the TT, you're fourth, you've got 32 seconds on Kelderman, and Kelderman obviously is a bloody good TT rider.
Yeah.
So at the start of that TT, did you fancy your chances of holding on to fourth?
I had no idea. I've been looking back through like past results and other TTs he's done, and it wasn't going to be easy, but I still thought I could, with that gap, I'd be okay. It'd be super tight though, which it was, but yeah, I thought it was going to be super close. And within a couple, like within 10 seconds either way, there would be no more. And the first time check, I was like quite relieved because I was at the same time as him. Second time check, I think I was up by 5 seconds. And then the second one, I was 5 seconds down or same time, actually. And yeah, I actually didn't believe the car at all because they were telling me like same time as we'll go, second time check. But I was so fucked by that point. I really just like the last couple of days have really hurt me. The Luz Ardiden stage, actually, where we started Tourmalet, where Iran got dropped, I also thought I was going to get dropped. I felt really bad that whole morning. I was like, oh, Jesus. But when we started Tourmalet, it was okay. The next day, we had another like long, flat day, and it also felt like real shit that day. But then we finished out near Bordeaux, and it was very special because we just like were able to like parade towards the finish. And we're through all the vineyards and all the crowds, and it was super special. And I got very emotional there. So when you then got to this TT, I didn't really, it's not like I didn't care. And for sure, I wanted to keep the fourth. But also, I already far outdone my expectations. So there was I had no weight. Like, you know, it didn't matter what I did. Either way, it would be a massive success. Four was a better number than fifth. But yeah, and I said, I think in one interview, I was like fourth and fifth, it's the same, but really it was by that point because it didn't mean anything else to me. Like, we were very, very close, Wilco and I, and it was just up to the TT to decide. And if he beat me by a fair bit, then that's his victory. It's not, you can't always pick and choose, really. But yeah, I was actually very scarred after that TT. I did a time trial in Luxembourg, actually, I think a couple of weeks later or a month later. But I was actually so nervous for it because I found like the bottom of my soul in that time trial. I was so done. If the tour was a day longer, I reckon I would have been in some struggle town.
So then it's all over.
Yeah.
The party's over. How long did it take for you to kind of realize the huge deal that finishing fourth on GC and winning a stage at the biggest race in the world? How long did it take for that to actually settle with you?
To settle, I don't know. The initial point actually I found myself like really thinking about it was that stage 19 where we did like we're through the vineyards and we went towards Bordeaux and the break one. But like that actually got super emotional. I think I almost cried on the bike. It was just so special. And like we had the right to sit right at the front of the tour as the Peloton cruised in. Like, I know it sounds silly, but like it was really special because you had earned that right. You'd earned that spot. And the amount of people and like the helicopter and you knowing it's the tour with all the vineyards as well. Like it just felt very, very special for when it like came through. I don't know. Maybe it would have been a month later or a couple of weeks later where, yeah, I guess it's kind of always coming in. You reflect about it a lot and you talk about it a lot. And when you talk about it, that's when you actually really remember. You kind of often forget because you're just, you know, a human being. But I did some interviews and I did a great like video with my mate Tristan, and that was actually a very big moment where it was the first time I like deep dived straight into the tour and reminded me of actually what it meant. Like how much kind of attraction it brings and what you kind of ride a bike for. And you look back at little clips of you speaking as well in the past to whether it's someone or either in memory or in video. And you do mention it, like it's winning something in the tour. And I was able to win something, plus you were able to technically or unofficially win fourth, which felt really, really special. And you have little daily reminders when you're out training as well, why people, I guess, showing appreciation to you on the road, you know, or when you're just out training, especially in the summer holidays, actually. A lot of the French tourists who are here in Andorra would come up and ask for photos and little kids. And that was very special because, you know, people come up to you with a smile, which is, it's nice. Like, it's nice that you give happiness or give joy to someone rather than like just telling a joke or just a conversation. Like you're creating some happiness for people. And I guess that's what sport does. We watch it for entertainment. We watch it to make us happy or emotional or angry, who knows. But I guess that is the role of sport in world, because people just like watching stuff.
Is your tour level like compared to your Giro level? Just those couple of stages at the Giro when you won and you were second.
Yeah.
Was there a big gap between the levels? Have you checked the numbers?
Yeah, I've checked the numbers. Yeah, I'd say the tour is definitely better. There's bigger. I did some very big numbers in the Giro, and I actually don't know if it's completely always right. Some of them were very high. Maybe it was like 10 watts too high, but they're still really high. I think definitely the tour you're doing bigger numbers all day, plus with the stress itself. The stage I won in the Giro, that was pretty like special, but we rode not very easy, but the start was very hard, as in the first climb where the break went, and then it was very tempo. Well, for example, this team stage was far, far harder all day. Like up at threshold every single climb, with minutes like well and truly over that in the middle of these sections. So there's a bit of a difference. I think the Giro mountain stages often are more steady and long drags of a day compared to the tour feeling a bit more explosive, I think.
So then the other thing I wonder is, you've finished fourth, you've won a stage, you have a little break. How hard is it to then restart and try and race that kind of end part of the season? From the outside looking in, it looks very hard.
Yeah, it's not fun at all. I can tell you that. It's like really not a good idea at all. I think if you plan the season around it, it can be okay. And I think actually it would be easier if you were sent to do Vuelta because then you've got no choice, you know, like you're kind of already there. So the gap is small between the Tour and Vuelta, and then you just have to do it. Whilst if you're trying to try to build for Italy, you can find a point where you just don't respond, which I found completely. I was just completely done. And the reason being is because the start of the season, it was only, I think I took a 5-day break after Romandy, but that was it. It was really the only like off bike time I took. I took none after Paris-Nice, none after Basque, none after Dauphiné, because I won two race after. Like it was on it. And obviously you had the collarbone thing at the start of the year. So I think if you can balance it and do like a race or two less in April, then you could be okay. And you can take a break after March, actually, which seems a bit weird, but if you start now training and then you build all the way to March and then have a little break, and I think it works. But yeah, I don't really want to do the Italian races again if you do the tour, like full for GC, because I think that it's, I mean, anyone that does it is just chapeau. I don't know how people do it, actually. Just it's, I just don't know how people can respond all year to being very good. But I guess that's where you find consistency in the best guys in the world, and something that personally I need to improve on, actually, because you just need to be good all the time.
Something to look forward to next year then, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely won't be doing, I hope, hopefully won't be doing Italy next year. I'd like to do Volta, and I'd like to try and get like the 3-stage wins. Could be cool. Giro last year, Tour this year, Volta next year. It'd be, I think it, like, it sounds nice if you do 3 in a row.
Yeah, I don't know how many people have actually done.
I have no idea. I know lots of people have won stages of of each one, but never like in, you know, progressive order.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's, that'd be one of the big aims for next year to be keen for. So I do have to be good at the end of next year.
So you're going to try and break your collarbone again?
No, like that, honestly. I think, actually, I go tomorrow, so we've got a team meeting camp. So it should be quite fun to see the new guys and get back in that team kind of atmosphere and build towards what next year is, because you take your break, you become a bit of alcoholic, you become pretty like, yeah, everything's quite fun. So, and your food groups are just pretty much like yellow, beige, red, a little bit of white, and just like, there's not a lot of green, there's not a lot of color. So, it's kind of funny when you think about it.
Welcome to my life.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd happily do that.
Well, Ben, thank you very much. Absolutely fascinating, particularly digging back into the Tour de France stuff. And hopefully next year's just as good.
Hope so too. Cheers.